Okay, everybody, it's Michael E. Cullen II.
And I'm Sesame Incarta from the All Too Real 2 podcast. We're passionate about movies, TV, and pretty much all things pop culture.
Dive into the chaos of failed sitcoms, direct-to-video sequels, and the quirky realms of cinema and TV.
Join us every Thursday for your dose of All Too Real 2 entertainment.
We'll guide you through debates like whether Howard the Duck qualifies as a superhero.
Ponder if Larry the Cable Guy could be the new Rock or Schwarzenegger.
Discover if some shows and movies should have stayed in the cutting room.
Ever heard of a sitcom featuring that dictator with the funny mustache? Well, we watched it.
We're dedicated to unraveling the peculiarities of pop culture, sometimes with awesome guests.
So, if you're into the eccentric world of pop culture,
listen and subscribe to All Too Real 2.
Available wherever you find podcasts
and on Age of Radio.
What's always got me too is like, did he mail it to the P.O. box? Like, how did Penguin pick up the submarine?
Yeah, he's just street fighting that man.
Don't listen to me.
It's not going to win an Oscar.
Is it great? Probably not, but it's memorable.
I don't support what he's doing.
Hello and welcome to Movie
Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash a movie whose source material is from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of Off Panel Creations. With me today, I have Jeremy Parmentier.
Hey, this is Jeremy Parmentier, also of the Retrovaniacs podcast, and I never have a problem getting rid of a bomb.
And our guest host this evening is Matt Williams.
I am Matt Williams, better known as Rockin' Mr. Magic, the founder of Geek Nation, J-E-E-K Nation, baby. And I also never have a problem getting rid of a bomb.
So our movie tonight is 1966 Batman the Movie, specifically Batman the Movie, and starring Adam West, Burt Ward, Lee Merriweather, and Cesar Romero, directed by Leslie Martison.
Batman speaking. Warning all of you to brace yourselves for big news.
The biggest.
Tell them, Robin.
Holy superlatives, Batman. It's really exciting. Soon, very soon, Batman and I will be batapulting right out of your TV sets and onto your theater screens.
That's right, Robin. Our first full-length motion picture feature in color opens a whole new world of thrills. The big screen gives us more space on land, sea, and in the air to challenge the most bataclysmic collection of super criminals that ever plotted to take over the world.
So, before we jump into the movie, Matt, you picked this almost 60-year-old movie for us. Why did you pick this one?
I picked it with great fervor. I am a big fan of the 1966 series, the film. I own the film on DVD. I own the series on DVD. I used to watch it as a child, the show on FX, when FX was still a brand new burgeoning network. I would come home from school at 5 o'clock. It would be Batman. At 5:30, it would be the Green Hornet. And then I grew up watching this particular movie. I'm going to date myself for any of your listeners, but there's this thing called VHS. And my mother, my parents, would record things, from the free Disney weekends and such. My mom had recorded the Batman 1966 film. And subsequently, because there were times where we didn't have cable or my parents would ship me into the basement, do whatever I wanted to do, I would rewatch movies and shows that were on the tapes. And I watched this film, as I was saying to Jeremy, off air. I've watched this movie probably about 100 times throughout my life. It's probably my second favorite Batman film. So that's why I was very quick.
Awesome. And having talked to Jeremy before this episode, this is going to be a fun discussion.
I am here for it.
And we'll get into those, into the characters particularly in a bit. But before we jump into it, I assume you guys are all familiar with Batman as a character before seeing this movie.
Yeah, I mean, he's Batman, Superman. There are some characters that you don't need to explain, right? You just know who they are. Somehow at birth, you know these two characters. And Batman
known,
is no exception.
They're known as the Trinity in the comic book world for a reason. And I'm a big comic book collector. I've been collecting comics.
Well, Matt, you have obviously seen this movie before. But Jeremy, was this your first viewing?
No, I'd seen this movie, I wouldn't say 100 times, but I definitely saw it a bunch when I was younger. much like Matt, I remember watching the TV show on, I don't remember what network it was. I want to say it was Nick at Night or something where they had it on all the time. But I watched a ton of the 60s Batman show well before the 1989 Batman movie. And, you know, so this was more the Batman I knew than even comics or anything else was this 60s TV Batman. So I know I had seen this movie several times because the parts, as soon as it starts, you're like, I remember this. I remember this. I remember this. But it had been a long time. I don't think I've seen this start to finish easily 20, 25 years. So this was a good refresher. And a lot of the things I thought I remembered were actually from the show and not this movie. So it was kind of good to piece together like, oh, this was the movie, not whatever episode I was blending into this movie.
Yeah, for myself too, this is the Batman I grew up on. So it's very familiar going back and watching. I don't know how many times I've seen this movie. I don't remember the last time I saw it. Sitting through it again, I remembered everything from it. There was no part of it that was like, oh, I forgot that. It's a core memory of my growing up at some point where this became one of the better known stories for me. But obviously everyone knows Batman, but Jeremy, do you have any insight on the comic book history for this?
I mean, if you listen to this podcast, we did an episode on Batman Returns, and Fergal, who's a much better comic historian, did a very good breakdown of the history of Batman and the character. I'm not going to reiterate it now because I'm also going to get it wrong, but basically this is more like the newspaper Batman, right? When you were a kid and there was daily newspapers and there was like the 3-panel Batman strip, and if you read it for 2 months, you'd get a story out of it. This feels very much like that kind of Batman. It is, it has like the TV show more than the movie had, like when they would fight, it would say like, pow, bam, and have these things on the screen. This actually has real choreographed fighting, but doesn't have that extra comic book layer. But that's what I remembered was that kind of stuff. And this does still have that feel to it, very much like the serial Batman comics.
If I can jump in on there, that Jeremy's wrap up is correct. The campy Batman was the initial and purveying Batman, essentially until the 80s, when the comics started to take a darker turn. So through the 50s, 60s, 70s, it was a very lighthearted, campy romp with Batman. Even though the movie does tone down a lot of the campiness that we remember from the show, it does still maintain it because they wanted to make it a little bit more serious since it was a feature film, but still keep some of those episodic campy portions to it so we don't get the biffs and bops and zaps until the very end.
Right.
Until that final battle.
Correct.
So just a quick spoiler warning. If this is your first time joining us, just a heads up. We're going to discuss the plot of this almost 60-year-old movie. I think next year is its 60th anniversary.
Correct.
This might be the oldest movie we have reviewed.
It is. It is so far.
And with that, we're going to discuss some elements of the story that are considered spoilers, but I'm sorry, if you have not seen this movie by this point, you never were going to, so consider yourself warned. So let's talk about the plot of it. Matt, can you walk us through what happens in this movie?
This movie features Batman and Robin, and as they deal with a plot to not just take over Gotham City, not just the country, but the entire world, from the likes of the Riddler, the Joker, Catwoman, and
Penguin.
Yes. Yeah, I said the Penguin in my mind. You mentioned some of the stars. I'm particularly a big fan of Cesar Romero's portrayal of Joker, Frank Gorshin's Riddler, Burgess Meredith, a legend, portraying the Penguin, and the ever-gorgeous Lee Merriweather portraying Catwoman.
As a kid, and before watching it this time, I've always kind of thought of the Cesar Romero Joker as like the one of the better Joker portrayals. I mean, yes, Jack Nicholson did a great job, and Heath Ledger, and he's not the only good Joker, but I love the Cesar Romero Joker. Like, it's the very much, you know, if there was going to be a Joker that had a jack-in-the-box to punch you in the face, this is the Joker that would have that, right? That's what I remember. However, I never was a big Penguin fan, but I actually like Burgess Meredith's Penguin in this movie. I like the character a lot more than I remember liking the Penguin in these. You know, I mean, again, we did talk about Batman Returns, and I did go on about how much I love Danny DeVito's Penguin, but it's such a different take. This is a more, I hate to say realistic in the terms of Batman, but he's a realistic villain in that he's not a half bird man. He is instead like just kind of that mastermind criminal. You know, he leads a bunch he has a bunch of henchmen that do his things, and he comes up with good plans and ideas. He buys a submarine, whether or not that's a good plan or not. He does the things you'd expect a supervillain to do. But he doesn't come across as, I don't know, like as weird as I remember him being. I kind of remember him kind of just being like goofy, but he wasn't in this. I thought he was actually, I like his Penguin, especially after reading more Batman books. I like this version of the Penguin.
I have a tough time picking a favorite because of how much of a cornerstone comic book movie This is for me, especially because up until, you know, Superman the movie and then Batman 89, we really didn't have many superhero movies to choose from. So there's something special about each portrayal, if you'll just give me the leeway. To piggyback off of Jeremy first, the Cesar Romero depiction of Joker is so fantastic because, in my personal opinion, he encapsulates the live action of what they wanted to show on the show, but also really embody what was in those campy versions of the comics. He was really a comic strip in action, and his laugh is the basis of all Joker laughs. Cesar Romero had a fantastic, witty, yet very creepy and scary laugh. And tying into Frank Gorshin's Riddler, which I have always thought was fantastic, there is a scene where Riddler and Joker laugh at each other in each of their unique psychotic laughs. And it is hilarious, but it's also scary. Like, if you like, these are two lunatics who are just reveling in their lunacy with each other.
Yeah, I think you're talking particularly about the scene where the Riddler and the Joker laugh at each other, because the Riddler says the reason he makes all these jokes is because the only thing that brings him joy in life is messing with Batman. And it's kind of like a I feel sorry for you laugh a little bit, as the two men just sort of laugh back and forth. They realize they were arguing over that statement.
The Polaris Sky Riders and you know, he's in, you know, Riddler's like, hey, I gotta make my jokes, and Penguin's like, no, make those messages clear. And Joker is like, ha ha, he said, make those messages clear. And Gorge is like, hee-hee-hee-hee. And Joker's just like, ha ha. And like, it's just really entertaining. Tying into that, tying into Penguin, Burgess Meredith, and if you are listening to this and you don't know who Burgess Meredith is as an actor, please educate yourself. Burgess Meredith was a fantastic actor. And I really think he made the Penguin a good character for. Batman Penguin's portrayal on the Batman show was one of the weaker points, and Burgess Meredith really knocks it out of the park. From just the waddle to the quack, 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 like he holds with both hands onto this character to bring it to life. And then there's the person with the toughest job in Lee Merriweather, because she had to replace Julie Newmar as Catwoman, who was so beloved as that character, and Lee really had to show that she was worthy of portraying Catwoman in this role, prove that she had the sex appeal to really pull in Batman with what the plot pertains to. Because not only do you have Julie Newmar, who by a lot of people, fans of this, consider their favorite, but you also had Eartha Kitt's portrayal of Catwoman from the show to compete with. So Lee really had the hardest job. And in my personal opinion, part of this, you know, was, you know, a young Preview Pleasant kid who had a massive crush on Lee Merriweather, but in the scene where she is like air grinding while she's looking through the periscope, was just like, okay, I'm digging that. But she was, you know, a gorgeous woman and a very talented actress who just had the toughest job of everybody in this film, because she really had to prove that she was worthy to be portraying this iconic super character. And I have to say, we can't leave out, and I forget their names for off the top of my head, but the actors that portrayed Commissioner Gordon and Chief O'Hara, who consistent, you know, rocks throughout the series and the film.
A couple of things I'll bring up, though, is the Lee Merriweather for Catwoman. She was not actually cast for Catwoman until they had already started filming the project, which is why there's a couple scenes where Catwoman's not in there when all the villains are talking to each other, because she wasn't part of it yet. So they actually started filming and said, we'll add Catwoman later. And I think she did a great job. She got really sort of, she took the role for herself, without a doubt. I do want to go back to Penguin real fast. And just a fact, if those who have not listened to our Batman Returns episode, we brought up in that episode how he originally was going to play the father of the Penguin in Batman Returns. However, he had passed away shortly beforehand, and I had to go with Pee Wee Herman instead.
Which is hilarious, because you know that the woman that played his Paul Reubens' wife is the woman from... Was with him
yes.
In Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
The waitress,
Marie, yep. Or whatever, that wanted to go to Paris. So that was just a very, you know, Tim Burton, you know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Tim Burton's first movie. That was just a really fun wink and nod to the fans.
Question for you guys on Joker. I felt like that he was really underutilized in the movie, because you had like the Penguin bought everything. It was all his stuff. Catwoman is out seducing people and getting them past security. The Riddler is the one creating these very loose riddles, if you would. The Joker really just took commands. And as I do like the Joker as a character, as a villain, not I don't support what he's doing, but as a character, I would feel like he should want to do more. And he felt like he was just underutilized this time watching. When I was a kid, I didn't notice that. But now this time viewing as an adult, I definitely noticed that he was underutilized.
Massively underutilized. I can't pretend to know why. My assumption would be twofold. One, he was so the primary antagonist in the show that it was kind of, you have to get away from something that we've seen previously. And also, the plot is so water-driven, you know, the submarine and everything. And there's even a line where they're arguing and Penguin goes, "On land, you may command. At sea, it is me." So they kind of were like, hey, you know, there's a reason why Penguin is, you know, is the big boss, you know, in this story that we're portraying here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the Penguin and the Catwoman really both have bigger roles in this. I think the Joker and the Riddler on the show were much bigger roles. They, like the Joker specifically has always been kind of like Batman's main villain, and he's not like leading all the villains. But when you think Batman, you think Joker, like they're two sides of the same coin. And the Riddler, I think, has such a unique spin on what he does that, you know, any Riddler episode is going to be a good one, right? So the movie, if you have them in it, you just, their being there makes them more threatening. It adds to the threat of the Penguin and the Catwoman. If it was just Penguin or Catwoman or just even the two of them, it might not have the same impact. It's also saying, oh, they also have the Joker and the Riddler. Like, you have the big four. You need them for this movie. It makes sense. But I also, that was kind of maybe why I like the Penguin more, is in this, he comes across as like, oh yeah, he's not just some weird, you know, kind of a guy that makes that laugh and has umbrellas. Like, he's a criminal mastermind. He's leading the Joker and the Riddler and Catwoman. They all have these plans, and he's kind of like the main like thought process behind this plan. So I do think that probably it is because the Joker and the Riddler had such a larger impact on the show.
Yeah, this movie was originally, the script rather, was actually the original pilot to the Batman series. And they got greenlit for the series before ever having to do a pilot. So they put this on the shelf. And also because they felt they couldn't have the budget to do this until later on. So once the first season had passed, they'd come back to this movie. So it kind of illustrates maybe the reason the Joker wasn't so big in it was because they hadn't figured out how good of a character he was going to be for the television series at that point. But those are all speculations. There's no behind-the-scenes documentary or commentary track when it comes to this movie. It's all based on what he said or she said in some interview 30 years after the fact.
And so many of them, unfortunately, are no longer with us that you're never going to get, you know, the true story there.
One thing I got to say about the Joker, and this is just anytime Cesar Romero's playing the Joker, is he never cuts off his mustache. He never shaves it off. And they just put the white on it. And when I was a kid, I never noticed it because the screen quality was so bad. But this time I watched the HD version of this movie and my kids pointed it out. And they're like, why is his lip dirty? I kind of think it adds to the campiness of this thing. Like, these guys knew what they were making. This was not them going in there saying, this is going to be a riveting movie. Even though, well, we'll get the intro in a second. But even though, like, they knew this was cheesy, right? They knew this was silly. It's fun. So I think
But again, at the time, they knew nothing different.
Right.
You know, unlike us who've grown up with different phases of Batman, it's what they knew. So they were going into this and like, hey, and it's the 60s, so like they're like, look, we're gonna have a good time. We're gonna sip on this alcohol. We're gonna take a couple puffs of this. We might take a line of this or that, and we're gonna go have some fun. And that's exactly what they did. They just went out and had a blast. Like, I can imagine how much fun they had on set making this film.
Now, we have skipped two important characters that we have just skipped. One is the titular Batman. How do you guys feel about Adam West's portrayal as Batman?
I mean, he's the Batman, again, that we would have grown up with, right? He was that Batman up until 1989. And even, I mean, honestly, fairly recently, I think I've talked about on the Batman Returns episode, like, oh yeah, Adam West was always like another good Batman, right? And when we ranked Batman or whatever. So I've always thought of him as like he's the campier side of Batman. You're not going to be like, oh yeah, he's the toughest Batman. He doesn't need to be the toughest Batman. He fits this role for this kind of Batman. And it's kind of like when we talked about the 1977 Superman and Christopher Reeves. It's hard to say that there's a better Superman. He was Superman. Like, this was Batman. Same idea.
Yeah, I'd have to piggyback off of that. not only was Adam West the Batman portrayal that we had, that we had a lack, it's not like we didn't have other options. There were a couple other, you know, live action Batman portrayals that just were not as good. Adam West's Batman also was a detective. And regularly was doing detective work. Obviously was on a light campy side, but even in this film, I mean, they're on the buoy and he's like, salt and corrosion, the old enemies of the crime fighter, no prints here. Like, he's doing detective stuff, you know. Yeah. Everything is clearly labeled in the laboratory. Like, he leaned more on, we have to use our minds and our fists. He always was going for, as far as, let's figure this out, let's come up with a plan, which we went away from, you know, in the later years for quite a long time. It was all, okay, Batman's just going to throw the suit on. He knows 800 martial arts and he's going to beat everybody down, where this was a very campy, but more of a mental battle, more than a physical battle between.
You're right. This Batman is definitely more of the scientist detective Batman rather than the kung fu fighting Batman. Now he can fight. He throws some dukes. Now he can actually fight people in this.
He's street fighting, though. Yeah, he's just street fighting Batman.
He's gonna he puts up, you know, the fisticuffs.
Yes, as he would say, as he said when they were discussing the plan to try to catch, you know, the Riddler from getting Miss Kitka, and he's like, and as he come in, I'll bash him brutally. he's quick. He's ready to throw hands, but yeah, he's not this Ra's al. This is before the Ra's al Ghul retconning and training and all that. This is just Batman throwing hands.
Now, Adam West initially turned down this role. Not the role of Batman for the TV show, the role of Batman in the movie. And until they threatened to say, we're just going to recast you then for the movie and the TV show if you don't do this. That's the only, he said he took it on there. I took it under with one condition. They had more Bruce Wayne scene, which is why you had that entire scene of him and Catwoman in the bar, one of the other seducing the other person.
Yeah.
But that's why you had those scenes added in there. Because Adam West said, I will do it, only we have those scenes in there. So this movie would have been a little bit shorter even than where we saw it.
It was a genius move by Adam West, because, and if I was in his shoes, I would have felt the same, because in the show, he spent so much time behind the mask. And any actor knows, you're acting, but you're selling your face, you're selling your looks behind your talent. He was like, well, why am I going to be behind this mask for so much of this film that the film needs to showcase me? It starts with him out without the mask, and then continues through multiple scenes outside the mask, from the date to the French restaurant and, you know, the chariot ride, escaping from the villains. There are several scenes where he is just chilling, very focused on Adam West, not in the mask. But everybody else is kind of normal in how they're portrayed from the show. With the exception of the showcasing of Adam West.
And that's what he said in an interview as well, was the weight of the mask was just too much.
Yeah, that cowl was thick.
It hurt him as an actor.
That's a heavy, I mean, like anybody that portrays Batman, that is a physically and metaphorically a tough thing to carry. You know, you are essentially carrying a beloved franchise, and as toxic as these fandoms can be, it is a tough thing to really weigh on you.
What is one of the scenes that stuck out to you the most?
I know I started the show with it, but when he's running around with the bomb while the band is playing constantly, like, that's the thing that you can't forget it. Like, is it great? Probably not, but it's memorable, which is probably better than being like, oh, that was really awesome. Instead, it's like, yeah, you'll never forget that. You see it once, you'll never forget it. The band clip that plays over and over again while he's running around.
I'll never forget that for the rest of my life.
I hope we don't get a copyright strike for that one.
It'll be our first one. I'm
pretty sure it's so old it's in public domain. Well,
and no one's gonna. It's fine. If we can play clips from trailers, I think we're probably okay. Yeah, I mean, that's notable. Honestly, for me, it was all the scenes of just, like, other than that, but the villains' scenes where they're all together. Because it doesn't happen that often in the show where you'd have all these villains in the same spot. So that's what I remember most about this, was all the scenes that were inside the submarine, or when they're dealing with even the fight time towards the end where they're all together. You don't get that level of villains in the show. That was what made this stand out for me. I honestly didn't remember the plot of this movie aside from all these villains to get together. I forgot what their plan was. It didn't matter because I was just seeing all of them together. That made this notable for me.
I would say, yeah, there's so many moments that are just funny. But I would say, I would have to say the scene that stands out a lot is the final battle, because it is the most like the show, where we have the zaps and biffs and blops and splooshes. We have just hilarious fight choreography, and somehow these two guys, you know, beat up 15 men, only to be foiled by the woman who they're not allowed to punch on camera. And she gets foiled because she trips.
She
breaks the heel in the submarine. And that, you know, somehow makes her mask fly off. But it's such a fun fight scene. You know, somehow their swords come in and Batman's fencing with Penguin, and Penguin's using his umbrella, and Batman's got a sword. And then they're all in the water and they're trying to climb out of the water. And it's just that whole climax, even from shooting the bat chargers to make them surface, is all just entertaining, because it starts with, and I would say that's tied with just the very beginning, which is actually now canon, and that is the bat repellent shark spray by shark, because that is now canon in the comics, as they have crossed universes and main Batman obtained the can of the shark repellent spray. Just watching the scene where you see this plastic shark on Adam West's leg and you hear the plastic as he's punching it is just pure hilarity. But he's selling it like it is really going on, like he is in dire straits. You know, those are like Jeremy said, you'll never, it's fun. It's memorable. It's not good. It's not high cinema. Martin Scorsese's never going to praise it. It's not going to win an Oscar. But if you watched it, you're not going to forget.
It's funny you say Oscar, though. C. Romero was the only Joker to never have received an Oscar.
It's not surprising. It's again, it's campy. It's fun. But especially if you didn't watch the show, if you've only read Batman comics from the 80s forward, like I just finished reading Hush because it's been kind of collected.
So good.
It's great. Yeah. It's wonderful. Very dark. Then you watch something like this, you're like, what am I, what is, this is jarring how not dark this is. I read Hush and I read the Owls, the Court of the Owls. Yes. Like both of those are extremely dark. They're great. But it's like, then you go into this and it's like, oh, what, shark repellent. Everything says bat dash whatever on it in the bat cave. When they go, even little things in it, like when they first go from, down into the bat cave from when they get that call at the very beginning. There's notes on there like, oh, this is Batman's pole. This is Robin's pole. This goes to the Batcave. Like, it's so jarring if you haven't watched the show recently, which I hadn't. I basically read a bunch of current comics and then went into this, and it was totally jarring.
I got to say, it seems like Batman or Bruce Wayne had a label maker and just went to town. Another little thing for you, too, is you mentioned that shark scene, and I was going to bring it up, but I'm glad you did. It makes that sound when he's punching it. Adam West was sitting with the editors and they wanted to remove that sound from it. He actually convinced them to keep it in. He said, people know it's not real. Like you see this plastic, it's obvious. It just adds to that.
Yeah. You see where the head is jammed in there to keep it from falling out. Like it takes, like you're not fooling anybody. It's funny. I'm glad I did not know that's a really cool fact.
The one scene I did also want to bring up was it's more talks about sort of this, the planning they do for these, their hijinks and how ridiculous they are and how really it does feel like that Silver Age of comics. One in particular I'm talking about is when the Riddler devises the ultimate plan on how to defeat Batman. And he does it by saying, okay, so Catwoman, you're going to seduce Bruce Wayne and bring him here. He'll be our bait.
Yeah.
Penguin, you get an octopus that explodes. We'll put it outside. And I think, what was it? The Joker had a spring-loaded floor that would shoot him through the window or
into
something?
Into the octopus.
We're going to kidnap some rich person, and then Batman will come save him. And he's like, oh, well, she'll be disguised as Kitka. And as Kitka, she will lure some rich millionaire here, and Batman will come rushing to him. He'll step on the Joker's jack-in-the-box, which will throw him up out into the window into the awaiting arms of Penguin's exploding octopus. And of course, apparently that was very funny for him. But it is an insane plan. And Riddler, of course, his portion of it was writing the veiled threat in the riddles that Kitka provided to to Bruce. And they did, with the plot, they did a good job of, because the whole thing was their powers combined means they're trying to take over the world. They did a good job in whatever plan they were doing. It involved all four of them and what they bring to the table as villains to make the terrible plan work to a certain extent.
To a certain extent. I do like the fact when Batman discovers that the Penguin has a submarine, he calls up the head of DOD. Yes.
And who's playing Tiddlywinks? With his secretary.
With his secretary. And he asks the question, have you recently sold a submarine? And without fail,
not just submarine. Pre-atomic submarine.
And he looks it up on his computer and goes, well, yes, we have.
Oh, no. That's
a Rolodex. He looks up on a Rolodex, which is hilarious.
that's a Rolodex that he looked. Yes, we recently sold one to a P. N. Gwynn. did this P. N. Gwynn leave an address? No, just a post office box. Would you like that? No, Admiral. Disposing of pre-atomic submarines to persons who don't even leave their full name and addresses. Good day, Admiral.
Yeah, because remember, before he says that line, the Admiral says, oh, have I done something wrong?
Have I done something wrong?
What's always got me, too, is, like, did he mail it to the P.O. box? Like, how did Penguin pick up the submarine? I have a P.O. box. They're not that big.
No. I mean, I know you can rent big ones, but I haven't seen the subatomic submarine size yet. But Penguin's got a lot of money because he's got Penguin umbrella-shaped jetpacks. So he was very...
With sidecars.
So he was very well-funded for this caper.
The overarching plan of these four criminals, from what I can tell, is they have this submarine, and other than to try to kill Batman so that they can succeed at any other plan they have, they're going to hold the, like, UN Security Council. It's not called the UN, but whatever, the Global Security Council hostage somehow by dehydrating them. Like, what a weird set of plans for the overarching plan for this.
That's for convenience purposes. Because how were you going to store them?
Yeah, that's just to kidnap them, and nobody notices that they're kidnapped. That's all the dehydration part.
Well, they're going to ransom back for $1 million a piece or $1 billion a piece.
$1 billion per country that was supposed to be delivered to some private island that Penguin somehow paid for as well.
I think Penguin's probably spent more than a few billion dollars on this plan already.
Yes, and they call themselves United. United Underworld.
Yes.
Which they were not very united. And they even made the point of that they were not acting very united. And I think Riddler even says, I think there's a line where Riddler says, like, they have to set aside their super criminal ego or something like that, because it was obviously getting in the way of their role. But yeah, they just wanted to kidnap some people and ransom them. It's a very simple, basic.
But somehow takes over the world.
It's kind of a shocking plan, because if you watched a current Batman movie, their plan would involve, like, burning down the building with everyone inside, right? It wouldn't be like, oh, we're just going to hold these people captive. It would be much more destructive in a current Batman. So it's kind of refreshing to have an evil plan that's not that evil.
Well, the plan was a little more than that, too. So we kind of alluded to this whole dehydration thing. So it starts off with they make a boat disappear by creating a hologram of another boat somewhere else for Batman to go investigate. And they do this because on that boat is, what was his name? The
Commodore Schmidlab.
Commodore Schmidlab, who owns a whiskey factory.
From the Big Ben distilleries.
Yeah, who has learned to, who's created a technology that dehydrates whiskey so he can ship it and rehydrate it on the other side of the ocean. So it's made for lower shipping costs. And they've decided to take this dehydrator and use it on people. And first people they do it with are actually their henchmen.
The five guinea pigs.
The five guinea pigs. You know, until you said that, I had no idea why the GP was on their shirts.
Yep, that's why the five guinea pigs.
Then he tries to rehydrate them, the Penguin does, inside the Batcave, but he uses heavy water instead of regular water. Correct. So they're atomically unstable.
Yes.
So you learn science in this movie, too. It's just educational. Yes.
Which, because at the lightest impact, render them into antimatter.
Which means, canonically, Batman does kill people. In this movie, there is no Batman movie where Batman has not killed somebody.
But that they did kill them, even though it was inadvertent, it was not purposeful. But they did kill.
And Robin even says that he's like, "Did we just killed him? He goes, I think they're not coming back. They've gone to another place. It's like the, it's like your dog has gone to upstate New York.
Right? Yeah, your dog went to the farm.
He's not coming back.
He's dying. He's on the farm. He's happy now. He's like, so they won't be coming back. And not in this lifetime, Robin. As they solemnly hop down from
it's like the, poor little Robin. Yeah. He's not. He
is this your first kill, death. Robin? Yeah, first kill, Robin. How's it feel, buddy? And then two of them kill themselves because they run into each other. And then Penguin kills the last one by hitting him in the back with the umbrella.
And then, so that's why they then go after the UN Council to take all, to turn them into dust. And then we end up solving the world's issues by mixing all the dust together and rehydrating him.
Thanks to Commodore Schmidlav, somehow, again, that infernal platform for the periscope made Catwoman trip, Schmidlav trips over, like everybody's tripping over this infernal platform.
They really need a sign. That's what they need. Batman should bring his label maker down there and put warning.
That was the problem on Penguin's ship. There was not enough labeling, even though it had a good amount of labeling on it itself. It was not sufficiently labeled, though.
And actually, that scene, that set for the submarine was used in a different movie around the same time. I was reading about it, but I completely forgot which movie that was. But so a lot of these sets were reused from other movies, which was a thing they did back in the day. So this movie takes about 107 minutes. Pacing-wise, did you want more of this, or was it too much?
I think this is a little long. I think it is, again, this would have been fine as like two TV episodes tied together, where there's commercial breaks and whatever else in it. I think there's just a lot of, and maybe it's because of those Bruce Wayne scenes they had to add in to make Adam West come back and play this again, but it's a little long. And maybe it's also the time frame the movie came out. Maybe this wouldn't have felt long in 1966, but it does feel a little long today.
I can't say it feels long to me, but that's probably a lot of my nostalgia talking. If I didn't have such a connection to the show and this movie, it probably would feel long. I'm going to say it is a bit long. Only because there is I would guess it's a sequel that was animated about 10 years ago called Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders with Adam West, Burt Ward, and I believe Julie Newmar reprising their roles. And it's animated, but it's same campy, added a bit more adult humor to it. And watching that, it felt a little long. So I would say that felt long, and if I didn't have the nostalgic attachment to this, it would probably feel a bit long. Because in reality, it's just a very long episode of the show.
Right.
Yeah, it definitely needed some editing. I mean, I try to think sort of what parts needed editing, but I think really sort of shortening a couple scenes down maybe would have made it work better. But it was the same pace the whole movie too. Like I don't really think of any slow parts except for maybe the dating parts of Bruce Wayne. Or actually, you know, I think about it, the scenes of the Batcopter and the Batboat, both very cool, but they were really long for what they were trying to do. Like, you're just watching that boat go for forever.
Oh, yeah, and you're watching, them in the copter, and Robin's waving to, somehow there's just random women on top of a building in bikinis for Robin to wave at, and then, like, and multiple trips to the Batboat. Yeah, it's and multiple trips to the Batcopter. Even the classic walking up the wall scene when they're conversating, it's a nod to the show. Like, yeah, did we have to have it? Because they didn't say anything interesting. It was like, man, I don't want to be a drunk. The drinking's a dirty habit, Robin.
It's a big PSA.
Yeah, it's essentially what it was. It was a PSA while they paid homage to the show.
I do like how the lesson of the PSA was they're all human. It's like, was that a problem? Like, were you not expecting them to be people?
Later on, when they did, and I thought that was great because, if you're going to make a PSA about that, but Robin's always, so like, oh man, that's such a dirty habit, this and that, they're terrible. And, Batman having to be wiser is like, yeah, they're still human. Like, oh, because he's like, oh, because that was after he, was with the, he's like, you did all that to save the lives of the riffraff in the bar. And he's like, it made me drunks, but they're human, Robin. Like, I can't just blow them up. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that would probably have Robin's reaction, sadly enough.
This movie, the budget for it is about $1.3 million. It was all, obviously, all practical effects. There are no CGI was not a thing at this point.
No.
How do you feel about the practical effects or the effects in general of this movie?
It's hard to really, it's hard to gauge that, like, because again, I'd seen this before. It reminded me of the TV show. It's something that's already baked in. So much like my comments on Superman 77, it's hard to say, like, yeah, this doesn't hold up, because it's exactly what I think it should be from my memories. So it's hard to argue it. It is that campy Batman, and it fits right in with, you know, that the show from the same time frame. So it, sure, if you never saw it before, and I would be very interested if someone had never seen this and had never seen the TV show and watched it, that's not, you know, 11, would think about this. But I think it's fine for what it is. I would feel weird if it had way more increased effects than the TV show did.
I would say it holds up very well for its age. And this, speaking as a big fan of television from and sci-fi from that period, I'm a big Trekkie. You know, I can compare it to the effects that, you know, we've seen during that same decade, and that same years of production, where when you watch some older Star Trek, fantastic practical effects for the time. But here and there, you can see things that really don't hold up or really don't age very well. Where here, because the special effects are used much more sparingly in this than they are in a show like Star Trek, they hold up better because we were talking about bits and pieces. Like the images of the Bat Chargers being shot, unless you really know what to look for to see the mistakes, you're not noticing them. And, you know, a lot of the little effects that they use that are supposed to be good still look pretty good, especially even in the HD versions. And the ones that are supposed to look cheesy, like the aforementioned, you know, shark attached to the leg and stuff, you know, they look the way they're supposed to. But I think, honestly, like, I think the best practical, my favorite practical effect of the movie is the bomb. You know, just him running around with this big, you know, circle bomb with the blue flame going, that could not have been an easy effect to do, and have that, you know, that light, that flame effect go as Adam West is clearly sprinting all over this set. So I think there were some really cool and very well done practical effects that hold up very well for being almost 60 years old.
You mentioned the scene where they're climbing upside of the building, which is a callback to the television show. I remember as a kid when I first learned how they did that.
Oh, they're
scene,
just walking. Yeah.
Where they're not actually climbing up anything. They're just, they're just walking, crouched down. And the way they make their case pull back is they got little strings holding them back, keep that the thing. You can see that in the movie. You can see those little strings in the movie. And I was reading an interview about Adam West. He was even saying how the special effects guys saw the strings, were trying to figure out how to remove them, and they just decided, we have the shark. Right.
Yeah,
we can leave the strings. It's okay.
And no one watching this movie is really, you know, really looking to point out those faults. They're not watching it for that.
Well, I think they add to the campiness of it. If it was cleaner, if this was a clean movie, I don't think the campiness would work. You know what I mean? If it kept like the tone the same, but it was beautiful effects, it would fall into that weird, you know, surreal category of movies where it just wouldn't work.
It would feel too much like a Sin City, and it just feels off.
So, and speaking of that, this movie is very cheesy, very campy. What type of Batman do you prefer? Do you prefer a campy Batman or a dark Batman?
I mean, I think now I prefer a dark Batman, but I think the campy Batman has a place, and I appreciate it.
Just the character of Batman, I prefer my Batman to be a bit darker. But when I say I prefer my Batman to have some camp to it, I'm referring to just the entire property. I personally feel that Batman the Animated Series is the best rendition of Batman. It's got a dark and serious Batman with a little lightheartedness, but there is it's chock full of camp, from Robin's portrayal to Mark Hamill as Joker, you know, to Two-Face, you know, Riddler, Penguin, you know, Mr. Freeze. Like, it's full of campiness while still maintaining a serious edge, a dark edge, a lot of detective work, a lot of real psychological analysts. Like, there's a lot of so many moving parts to that. So I like a healthy mixture of all those parts that make up Batman. So too much camp I can do without, but just the right mixed in, right amount of dark, right amount of campiness. Is, you know, I'm like Thanos, I'm looking for that balance.
I like a world where both Batmans exist in them. I prefer personally as an adult watching the darker, grittier Batmans to a certain point. I mean, you can go so dark, it stops being Batman. There is that point. But I do like the fact that I can have a cheesier, campier Batman I can watch with my kids. That is nice, which is where the cartoons really came in. Like, I love the animated series, but there are other, you know, there are other animated versions as well. And I can watch most of those, not a lot of these direct-to-DVD versions.
Yeah, not the DCEU movies, no. Not the animated version movies, but the other ones, yeah. The Brave and the Bold, you know, stuff like that, yes.
Yeah, the mainstream, and I can help introduce them to that world that way. One thing I do want to touch upon are the riddles in this movie, and I want to bring them up because I forgot how bad they were.
Oh, yeah, they're class. I mean, we would have those. That's like a YouTube, you know, dad joke show. Like, that's like, you know, what's weigh 6 ounces is in, and lives in a tree. You know, a sparrow with a machine gun. Like, yeah. like who comes up with that? You know,
the full riddle was, what does a turkey do when it's upside down? And the second part was, what's 6 ounces and deadly in a tree or something like that? And the answer, the first one is a turkey laying upside down would be gobbled down, and then a canary with a machine gun is dangerous. So it's what? So that's how they knew Catwoman was the fourth villain,
because it gobbles up and then gobbles up, you know, a bird.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
The riddles are very, you know, they're very campy. I'm trying to think of another one.
I mean, let's be honest. They launch out of rockets that explode and become skywriting of these riddles. So they're already ridiculous, even if the riddles were incredible.
And some of the clearest skywriting I've ever seen.
Yeah, drones couldn't even pull that off.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking like 4 sentences worth of a riddle in the sky from one rocket.
Yeah, they look like the text from like an intro to a Star Wars movie. They're just like very clean, tilted slightly.
And the only thing it wasn't doing was just the Star Wars crawl. Everything else was just, hey, everybody can read this.
Exactly. So obviously, I think we've all got some fond memories of this movie from our childhood, but looking back with fresh eyes, what are some of the key things you actually really enjoy about it, but what things do you think they wish you had changed or done differently?
So what I enjoyed was that they did have all four villains and that they did have some infighting, right? I had forgotten that they had the parts where they're arguing with each other about, you know, why they are a better villain, essentially. Like, oh, this idea is ridiculous, or here, you know, here's why I would have done it differently, or whatever. I like that they're not a cohesive unit, right? That's part of their downfall, is that they aren't a cohesive unit. So I did enjoy that. I did like the, again, it had been a long time since I've watched this, so it was nice to see the Cesar Romero Joker. And again, I did appreciate the Penguin more than I think I had previously, the Burgess Meredith Penguin. So I liked that. I liked going back and seeing these characters, because I think Matt said this earlier, that this Joker is the blueprint for every other Joker that followed this, right? Every Joker has to have a laugh that kind of sounds like this, right? It's their version of this laugh and this character. So I did appreciate that. What I would have done differently is maybe give the other characters who aren't the Penguin and maybe the Catwoman some better input into this plan. Like, maybe there should have been like a larger part of that the Joker would have been involved in. I mean, the Riddler has these riddles, I guess, but again, they're not very good, and like the whole, I don't know, he didn't do as much in this as you'd expect. I think both the Joker and the Riddler should have had their own facets to this a little stronger, but I understand for time that's probably not incredibly likely. So, but that's really, I mean, again, I think some of the Bruce Wayne parts are long, but now that you have the backstory of why they're in there, it makes sense, I guess. But I would have probably cut those in half.
Yeah, I would say, because to do anything different would make the movie longer. Because I kind of agree with what Jeremy said. It would be nice to have a little bit more of a fleshed out purpose for Joker and Riddler, especially because of it's not even the characters are great, but also it's just the talent that is just not being, like, Frank Gorshin and Cesar Romero are just fantastic. So just having that talent to be underutilized, it's kind of crappy. If you're fresh to, especially if you're fresh to the movie and you don't have the memories of the show to lean on. But also, because he really doesn't get a whole lot of praise, and we haven't really talked about him much, Burt Ward doesn't have much to do in this film. So I think, if anything, if you were going to give Burt Ward a little bit more to do, that could have tied into giving Cesar Romero and Frank Gorshin a little bit more to do as Joker and Riddler. And that, you know, you could have probably added 5 to 7 more minutes to this movie and made it a bit better without it really extending it.
True. I think for me, going back and watching again, I do appreciate is that, and we talked this for other movies, this is an ensemble cast. There are 4 heavyweights in this room, right? Even though the Catwoman was brought on later, she's a heavyweight, right? There could have been some infighting. There could have been some, I mean, on the actor level, not the characters, but like the actors wanting the limelight more. So ensemble casts are very difficult to do typically. And they did a great job of keeping that balance.
You've got five leading actors in the film.
And they all share the limelight. No one's greedy about it. That's really hard to do. And I do appreciate that about it. Some things they could have done better for me. There's nothing sort of significant for me that they could have done differently. And the reason why is because I think you guys touched on it. It just makes the movie longer. I just add more to it or shortens it up and we lose the campiness that's there, which is the whole point of the movie. I mean, at this point, maybe at that time, maybe it was meant to be more serious or more of a for that moment. But for me now, looking back on it, you go into it looking for camp. Like, you can't go to this, I want a serious Batman movie. I want to know where Batman comes from. No, you're going there because Batman runs around with a giant bomb and a tuba keeps showing up. I mean, one thing they could have done better, they should have King Tut in there. Now, let's bring some of the really terrible villains from the TV show and throw it in there.
Yeah, why not? I mean, you could have had all of the Catwomen show up and then figure out what's going on.
Or even just where they bring up the closed circuit television at the commissioners. There's only four villains currently at large. Why don't we have, like, show eight villains that are at large? That way Batman actually has to deduce it's these particular four, not that it's all, you know, it's the answer is E, all the above. But that's just like a little thing, just because there were some really campy villains from that TV show.
I was going to say, what were the other ones you'd pull in there? Yeah.
The only thing, yeah, I honestly, the only problem is if they would have done more from the time and the studio. The only thing they probably would have done would have been like a crossover, and they probably would have tried to cross Green Hornet into it somehow, like they did on the show. And that would have just, like, it could be, and Van even makes an uncredited appearance as the president. So, like, my thing is, like, they probably would have tried to do too much in that aspect. And that would have really just drugged the movie down. I thought they did a really good job balancing what they could. You know, because you couldn't do much without Napier as Alfred. You gave him a couple lines. I don't even think that Aunt Harry even had a line. Like, she was just there. Yeah, she's just there in the beginning.
She has no lines.
You know, Alan Napier's great, you know, great facial expressions, you know, for the little bit that he got to do. And, you know, that silly scene in the car following them, you know, where Robin just doesn't want to watch Bruce make out. Like, you just didn't have a ton that you could really be that flexible with. Because they probably could have done a little bit more with either Chief O'Hara or Commissioner Gordon that led into the Joker, into the story, rhythm to the story. Maybe, you know, they get kidnapped or whatever, you rescue them, something like
that. Commissioner Gordon and the Chief Police, they were always like Batman's hype man.
Yeah. And one thing that's really interesting, I forgot to mention earlier, is with this Batman and the campiness, is that this Batman is not a vigilante. Yes, he is they are deputized members of,
and he holds press conferences.
And he holds press conferences
where he lies to the public.
Yes, and then after, right after they leave, he's like, "I couldn't tell the truth instead of panic." It's like
he's literally lying to the public. Like, what are they trying? Yes. Like, who is the moral high ground in this movie? All your heroes don't get to know them; they get ruined.
Yes, absolutely. It's just unfortunate they just did not have. Because, I mean, like, if this was four or five episodes, you know, you could have really, you know, fleshed it out more and had a more coherent story. But you had to really shove it into that truncated timetable. And I think they did as best as anybody could, especially, you know, from the producer and director side. They did a really good job of compiling all this together.
Well, why don't we look towards the future a little bit? Do you want to see, especially with the DCU being rebooted, sort of? They're saying they're coming out with like a slew of different kinds of movies, different themes. It's all not going to be all dark. So, you know, like Superman's going to be very different than Creature Commando, right? As tonally. Do you want to see a campy superhero movie? I don't care if it's Batman or not, but do you want to see some superhero movie come out that's campy again?
Well, with James Gunn running DC, it's going to happen because that's what he's good at. I'm not the biggest James Gunn fan, but I give him all the props in the world for turning Guardians of the Galaxy from being like D-list characters in the Marvel universe that no one really cared about, and he turned them into household names. That's a fantastic feat that I never thought anybody would be able to do, or even undertake for that matter. So because of his success in that aspect, I am very sure that we're going to see some campiness in the DCU from some of these lower level you know, level less popular characters. I didn't see the full trailer because I try to stay away from trailers now because they show too much. But just the clip of Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner, that is walking camp. Like, it doesn't get campier than that costume design of Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner. Or
Crypto the dog.
Yeah, and I love Crypto. Like, I mean, I grew up on that Superman cartoon with Crypto, like, and the Superboy cartoon with Crypto. Like, I'm here for more Crypto. And the way they use Crypto in Teen Titans was pretty whack. So, not just Teen Titans, but just Titans. It was pretty, I was very unfulfilled with that. So, no, there's going to be camp. Gunn makes his living off of camp. My concern is not for DCU, it's not going to be camp, is the serious parts. Can he get those right? Because James Gunn can do camp. I think he's going to do just fine on that aspect. But yeah, I think we need balance. And for rumors of Lobo coming to the DCU, he's a very campy character. So we're going to get more than our fill, probably.
I think you're right. There does have to be a balance. Not everything can be the Dark Knight and shouldn't be. I don't need a lot of grim, dark superheroes. I didn't really care for Batman versus Superman because I thought it was too dark and there wasn't enough fun in it. So it'll be nice to kind of have a slightly lighter Batman.
This movie was originally going to have a sequel between seasons 2 and season 3, the way this was between season 1 and season 2. And it was where they're going to introduce Batgirl as a character. Instead, they decided not to because popularity of the TV show was waning by that point, and they didn't want to spend a million and change for the new movie. If that movie existed today, would you want to watch it?
I'd watch it, but again, like this, I think this fits right in with the TV show. You could have told me this was 2 to 3 episodes that they tied together as one movie, like the Transformers movie, and I would be fine with that.
It's funny, Jeremy, he was saying about the stitched together episode. I really thought that's what this was, and not until this podcast, reviewing it again. Like as a kid growing up, I really thought it was just a really long episode. But when we sat down, I started doing research on it, realizing it was an actual movie they put together to do this. I understand where you're coming from about it being feeling like 2 or 3 episodes, because that's all I thought it was for the past 40 odd years. Now, there were 2 spiritual sequels that came after this movie. And Matt, you mentioned one of them, Caped Crusaders. It came out in 2016. And in 2017, Batman vs. Two-Face came out. Both are animated. Both are Adam West. And it's the same feel to it. Obviously, we're not here to review those movies. If you have not seen them, would you see those movies?
Well, I have seen the one. I haven't seen the Two-Face one, but I plan to, since, if my memory serves me correctly, William Shatner voices Two-Face, which is probably going to sound absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, I was unaware those things existed till today. I would gladly check both of those out.
Yeah, William Shatner is Two-Face. But basically, it's Jeremy. I own both of those. So if you're by the house, I'm going to give them to you. But the reality is they're on HBO Max too. But
that'll be easier.
it literally is this TV. It is the Batman TV show just brought into animation. It's the same feel. They don't miss a beat. It's a little more adult oriented, but I wouldn't say hard R or anything like that. It's more like a PG-13-esque.
Yeah, it's not Harley Quinn. They're making innuendo and then kind of like winking at you.
So, Jeremy, should people go find this movie?
This is a hard one to find. It's not for free anywhere. You've got to pay to watch it. And I think if you weren't the age generally that we all were, where we grew up with this, I don't know how this would hold up. I'd be very curious to see if someone who had never seen the TV show Batman appreciated this or not. So I think it's worth finding, but it's hard for me to determine whether or not that's only because of nostalgia.
Yeah, it's if someone claiming to be Batman fans, if they really want to know all aspects of Batman, I would definitely recommend that they watch the movie, but give them the caveat that it's not the Batman that they're accustomed to, especially if they're younger, because to them, old Batman is Batman 89.
If you've never seen the original TV show, you got to go on. You got to be warned, right? You got to know what you're about to walk into. And I was watching my daughter, and she was saying it feels like a spoof of Batman. Like, it feels like someone's making fun of Batman. And honestly, that's not what's happening here, obviously. But I think if you go into it not knowing that TV show existed or had watched that TV show, you might feel that way going into it, because it is so silly. It is so campy. So I think, should people go find it? It's an experience. As Jeremy said, it was really hard to find this movie.
It's easy to find. It's on the Internet Archives, the full movie, free. Watch it. Did you pay to watch it? Oh man. No, I mean I already owned it, but yeah, it's on the Internet Archives. It's free to watch.
There you go. For our listeners, go out to Internet Archives and don't listen to me. Before we rate this movie, we'd really appreciate if you, our listeners, can go to Apple or Spotify, leave us a 5-star review, let us know how we're doing, give some support to the show. It helps other listeners find us with the algorithms of podcasts, so don't keep us a secret. So in closing, guys, how would you rate this movie?
So it's hard to rate this. I have to kind of echo my comments from Superman 77, which is that it's hard to rate something that was always just there for me. It was always something I watched over and over again. That said, I think it's easy to then just rate it a bat thumb. One bat thumb up, as opposed to an actual rating. It's of the time. It's worth seeing, but I can't rate it.
I find it very easy to rate. I would rate it 66. Catwoman grinds while purring, looking through the periscope.
I can tell that was a defining moment in your youth.
It really was, absolutely.
Jeremy, I'm with you on this. It is hard to rate this thing because. Is it a good movie? No, it's not a good movie. Is it well made? No, it is not well made. Was it fun? Yes. Did I laugh like dumb dad joke laugh? Yes, several times during this movie. And how ridiculous that bomb scene is. I mean, it is dumb ridiculous. But at the same time, you know what you're getting. It's kind of like going to McDonald's, ordering a hamburger, and being upset that you got a hamburger. I mean, you know what you're going when you go for this thing, which is why it's hard to rate because I wouldn't give McDonald's be a good hamburger either. Is a good meal. It's okay. It'll get you through it. But go enjoy yourself. I don't know where that analogy is going, by the way. But at the end of the day, I'd say it's worth the watch if you've – I can't imagine you've never seen it. But if you've never seen it, go watch it. But understand it is not your kid's Batman. It's not even like a teenager's Batman. It's not a 20-year-old's Batman.
It's grandpa's Batman.
It's grandpa's Batman. When superhero comics were basically
– and they were four kids.
Very kid things. See here. So we have no mailbag to go over today, Jeremy, because Fergal's not with us today. So, but for our listeners, if you want to send us a note, go to movie-smash.com. Go all the way down to the bottom of the page. There's a form you can fill out, put your information in, send it to us, and we'll read your note on the air. But in closing, guys, where can people find you?
You can find me. Wow. You can find me most places, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can find my brand, which is Geek Nation, JeekNation, Geek Nation. We have multiple podcasts, the original Geek Podcast, Breaking Ring Rust, which is a pro wrestling show. And we at Geek Nation, we pretty much have the best conversations combining the jock world and the geek world. So former college athletes who love anime, love comic books, love the NBA, love the NFL. And we combine those two very different worlds into one smooth concoction.
And Jeremy?
You can always find me here every 2 weeks, but also at Retrovania.net, where it hosts our podcast, our social media sites, our streaming channels, everything retro gaming.
And for me, you can always find me at All Fatal Creations. We're always there building some piece of nerdy furniture. I want to thank you, our listeners, for spending some time with us today. If you have any thoughts, just send us a note at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It, too, can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.